According to author Ben Hart, writing in 1988, at the time of American independence, 98.4% of the American population were professing Protestant Christians. 1.4% were professing Catholic Christians. That means that 99.8% of the Americans around 1775, 1776 were professing Christians. That's amazing. Many of these, of course, were from England. There were many also from Ireland and Scotland. Some were from Germany. And we're going to talk right now with my good friend, historian and author Bill Federer, about the American population in 1776. This is Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Bill, thanks again for joining us on this program. I appreciate it.
And Jerry, great to be with you.
Okay. So I know you have studied this issue, and we should also mention, of course, there was the African-American population brought in against their will, most of them. So what was the makeup of America around the time of independence? And by the way, let me give you a quick reference. In March 1775, in St. John's Church in Richmond, Patrick Henry gave his famous Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech, and he said he estimated that the population of America at that time were something like 3 million. So go ahead and break down the population at that time.
Right. So you had the Ireland being Catholic, and the Spaniards in 1588 sending their Spanish Armada to recapture England and bring it back under the Catholic umbrella. And they were defeated with the help of the Dutch and with the help of a hurricane. But the Spanish landed in Ireland, which was Catholic, and they were beginning to mount an offensive to go from Ireland to attack Britain. And the British, even with Oliver Cromwell and others, invaded Ireland, defeated the Spanish. It's called the Battle of Kinsale. And
wait. Let me stop you real fast. The Spanish Armada, that's in the days of Elizabeth the First. So this is in the late parts of the 1500s. Cromwell, you're jumping ahead to the 1650s, half a year. So this must have been a long-term type of process then of the Spanish trying to, invade, Ireland, to use parts of it to invade, really, England. Clarify that, if you would.
Yeah, so it was a multi-generational attempt. Queen Elizabeth was one that was acutely aware of this. William Penn Jr., the son, he participates in a battle to put down an Irish Catholic rebellion. And, it's the first time, this is in the 1660s, and it's the first time the young William Penn puts on armor and he considers a career in the military. And of course, his dad discourages him. But, the Battle of Kinsale is 1601 to 1602, and the Spanish are defeated, and they get on their boats and sail away. And the Irish can't get on boats and sail away. And so the British, in the fighting, kill about 500,000 Irish, and then another 500,000 of them they put on boats and sell them into slavery. And so a lot of these Irish are sold to the Caribbean, different British settlements. And then the King James and some of the other kings bring Scottish.
Wait. Do some of those Irish end up in North America?
Correct, yes. And some of them are in the islands in the Caribbean. So you'll go to Cuba and find out there's, O'Fallon, which is O'Fallon. I know a friend of mine's Michael O'Fallon, but his ancestors were Cuban Irish. It's like, where? Tell me that story. But they had been brought in as slaves.
So back to King James. And by the way, we're 5 minutes into this program, so we have 9 minutes left. Go ahead. King James the First.
Right. So he transplanted Scottish, who he never really, the British and the Scottish didn't have a really good relationship, right? William, all the different battles through the years.
Braveheart says it all. Okay,
Braveheart,
go on.
There you go. And so he took Scottish from Scotland and transplanted them in Northern Ireland. And so those are Protestants. And so the Northern Ireland was Scottish Protestant, but then the Southern Ireland was Catholic. And so in the North, they ended up being called Scots Irish. And they were successful and then there for about a century. And then they had an economic downturn. They specialized in sheep and in making wool and very good at it. But when this economic downturn happened, a lot of them immigrated to the colonies in America. And as you referred to, but about two-thirds of the colonies and the founding fathers had Scottish or Scots-Irish blood in them. And so that's a first wave. But the second wave was in the early 1800s. It was an Irish potato famine, and millions of Irish Catholics came to America.
Okay, wait. I gotta ask you about this. You're saying, okay, repeat this thing about the two-thirds.
Yeah, so Thomas Jefferson had Scots-Irish blood in him. John Witherspoon, the president of Princeton, he was from Scotland. And it was Benjamin Rush and others that went over there and recruited him to come to the colonies. And during the Revolution, he said, well, this is like the old ancient battles that the Scottish had with the British. We're just fighting it, you know, in this hemisphere. And so you had a lot of Scots and Scots-Irish blood that was in the different founding fathers and it was that more or less ancient hatred of the British that they restirred up during the Revolutionary War.
But did I understand you to say that something like two-thirds of the founding fathers had Scotch-Irish blood in them? Did I understand
yeah.
that?
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Now, that would not mean two-thirds of the colonists in America at that time had such or had same.
I've seen it with the term of the founding fathers.
So. Okay. And by the way, this makes perfect sense because, this is an overlooked fact often, but there were hundreds of thousands of Presbyterians, exactly how many, I don't know, but there were hundreds of thousands who came to America during the 1700s. Now, of a population of 3 million, hundreds of thousands is a lot. And again, these people were mostly independence minded. I remember a statistic where it said that at the time of the surrender at Yorktown, every colonel in the American Revolution for the American side was a Presbyterian elder except one. So in other words, there were a lot of Presbyterians involved in the independence push.
Yeah, and in Virginia, which was Anglican, they brought in the Presbyterians to live in the Blue Ridge Mountains to be a buffer between them and the Indians. So it's like, okay, we have the Anglicans that were down in the Tidewater area and where all the ports were and so forth, and they had the Indians, and they thought, well, let's go ahead and let these Scottish and Scots-Irish immigrants live in the mountains of Virginia, the Blue Ridge Mountains, but they can be a buffer between us. So Patrick Henry that's the area he was from up in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And his mom would go to a Presbyterian church and the dad was a faithful Anglican and he definitely leaned toward the Presbyterian side of standing up to the king. But this is a fascinating makeup and of the country. And so you then had this Irish potato famine. So when we became independent, as you mentioned, I read through every state constitution. 9 of the original 13 state constitutions required office holders to be Protestant. 3, all you had to do was be a plain Christian, believe in the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost, like in Delaware. 1 had 0 religious requirements. Rhode Island, founded by Baptists, they said if you required someone to be a Christian, they could say they were. Even if they weren't, that would be hypocritical. But Catholics were only allowed in 3 states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. And after this Irish potato famine, they went from 1% to 20%. There was a backlash. Many laws got on the books called anti-sectarian laws that were later a century brought up and used to by evolutionary judges to discriminate against Christianity.
Well, wait, can I ask you a quick question? I believe the potato famine. We're talking now in the early 1800s as opposed to the founding era. Is that right? Just to clarify.
Yeah. 1820s, 30s. And so there was a big anti-Catholic backlash, and people put signs in the window, no Irish need apply. And as a result, they spread out across the country, and you began to have these populations of Irish all across the country. And they would work in the railroads, they'd work in the mines, they would do a lot of the jobs, but they were discriminated against. They were called the white, and then they would use the N-word.
Wow.
And they would have cartoons to that effect.
Yeah, okay. Now, let me get back, though. I did want to just focus on the founding era itself. So if you could get us back to the late 1700s, I understand there were many people who came from Germany that might not even be able to speak English, even.
We went to Ellis Island years ago, and in the middle of the big the big place with a high ceiling in this enormous room where they processed the immigrants through, they had a display on the ground, a sort of square, and had the centuries, 1620s, 1630s, 1640s, 1650s, and they would have little columns that would rise up, and then on the side it had different countries. And so at the beginning, you see the English and the Scottish and the Scots-Irish and the Dutch. But then you begin to see the Germans, and they began to get higher. And then as you go into the 1800s, you would have Ashkenazic Jews from Eastern Europe. You would have Italians, and you would get – further along, you would get more from Central and South America, and then Asian countries and so forth. And then at the end, it would say in 1965 is when Lyndon Johnson and Teddy Kennedy changed the immigration quotas to bring in more immigrants from third world countries. And because of the more or less open borders, they have no way of tracking it. So that's when they're
wow.
They just stuck with the ones that came through Ellis Island.
That is fascinating. Okay, we have a minute and a half left. So going back to this population of America, what about the African Americans, the slaves and so forth at the time of independence?
About 500,000 slaves were in America in the early 1800s, right before the Civil War. It was estimated to be 4 million slaves, and 1807 was when the importation of slaves was outlawed, and that's the same year that William Wilberforce got the British Empire to stop the slave trade. But in 1833, William Wilberforce was able to get the British Empire to free the existing slaves. Not so in America. It was obviously after the Civil War that we freed the existing slaves. But both England and America stopped the slave trade officially in 1807.
Excellent. Okay, now we have 30 seconds left. How about a comment about the fact that 99.8% of Americans at the time of independence, around that time, were professing Christians? That's an amazing statistic. 30 seconds.
Yeah. I read through all the state constitutions. You could not hold office in any state unless you were a Christian. Nine of them had to be Protestant Christian, three just a plain Christian. Even Ben Franklin signed Pennsylvania's Constitution in 1776 that required office holders to believe in the divine inspiration of the Old and New Testament and believe in the creator of the world, governor of the universe, and so forth. So, they were Christian, just different denominations. They learned how to tolerate each other. It took them a long time. Then they tolerated the Catholics and then the Jews and then finally tolerated the atheists. And the last one's in when I kick the first ones out. So I wrote a book on that called Backfired.
All right, Bill, we're basically out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Bill Federer, AmericanMinute.com. Bill, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry.